Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to the largest segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize that the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, that they've become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. I am Yada. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. The Abominator yesterday, on his heels, in his own narcissistic fantasy world, ever belligerent that the only sane country in the entire Middle East, its Prime Minister, Netanyahu means gift, Yah, and Yahu are short for Yahweh, means Yahweh's gift. That Yahweh's gift is speaking before Congress at the invitation of the Speaker of the House. And he hates Netanyahu. He hates Jews. He hates Israel. And he's done everything he can to side with the Muslims to bring Israel down, including attacking, declaring war on the Islamic State, destabilizing Libya so that it is nothing now but a terrorist hellhole, putting Egypt under a military junta after giving the country to the Muslim Brotherhood, inspiring that uprising, and empowering Iran, essentially running in Iran's favor, blocking every obstacle out of the way for them to complete their nuclear arsenal. And so he is now on his heels, because he knows that Netanyahu is going to tell the truth, that the American abomination plan with Iran is nothing more than a license for them to have the nuclear bomb. And so he then came out with a speech yesterday. He said that his proposal then to Iran, and if he's offering fresh proposals now, it's because there is a complete and utter breakdown in the negotiations. That rather than Kerry's statement a week or so ago when he was running, blocking and running on behalf of the Abominator and his condemnation of Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu. And he said, you know, we're so close to a deal that this is counterproductive to have the Prime Minister of Israel speak to the U.S. Congress because we're so close to a deal. Well, then, why did the Abominator come up with a whole new deal yesterday? His deal yesterday was a 10-year hiatus in the development of a bomb for Iran. They can have a bomb 11 years from now, no problem. They just can't have one in the next 10 years. Talk about capitulation. And a complete reversal. It's to say that we have no deal. We're nowhere close to a deal. We're going to be made look like fools in this whole thing. So I'll come up with a Hail Mary. And my Hail Mary, or Hail Mohammed in this case, is that they refrain from developing a nuclear bomb for 10 years. And in the 11th year, that'd be okay. Puts him, by the way, right at the cusp of the tribulation. 11 years from now is 2026. That's the year the tribulation begins. But guess what Iran said? Now, Iran, who the media wants to tell you is developing nuclear power for the generation of electricity, which, of course, is why they've refined the nuclear fuel that they have from 3% fissile purity, which is the ideal fissile purity to boil water in a nuclear power plant, to 60 to 90% fissile purity, which is what you use to create a nuclear bomb. That's why they've been willing to trash their entire economy on a country that floats on natural gas and oil to generate electricity to boil water. Yeah, right. So the Abominator's statement was just refrain for 10 years, and Iran said, hell no. No, that's unacceptable. Now, if they're saying that it's unacceptable, what does that mean? If a 10-year hiatus in them developing a nuclear bomb is unacceptable to them, that means that they fully intend not only to develop a nuclear bomb in far less than 10 years, but to have all sanctions removed by the abominator in the meantime. That's what that means. It not only means that there is no progress to any kind of a rational agreement that would constrain Iran's development of a bomb. That's why the Hail Mary, or the Hail Muhammad in this case, and the very fact that Iran immediately said, no, we're not willing to wait 11 years for a nuclear bomb. Go away. Tells you everything you need to know about the status of events in this world. Now, I have reported this before, but I want to reemphasize it. And I'm going to make two points. First of all, is there are a number of countries with nuclear weapons. Most of the countries with nuclear weapons, all but one of them, is reasonably sane in the sense that they aren't going to use them because they know the consequence of using them. They only have them to keep other countries from invading them. You know, when the Pakistanis developed a nuclear arsenal, while they are the only country with a nuclear arsenal that isn't sane because it's an Islamic state, the likelihood, so long as the military stays in control of that country, is that they won't use them. However, because the United States has done so much to promote fundamentalist Islam by attacking it, which is that if you want to promote a dogma conceived as a criminal enterprise, as a war manifesto, declare war on it and it will grow. And so, you know, it's kind of like throwing live chickens into a pool of piranha. It's a feeding frenzy for a Muslim when you declare jihad on them. So, with Iran, however, it's an entirely different scenario because that is a religious state. It's a theocracy based upon the Quran, based upon the Hadith, based upon Muhammad. And as such, they know what Muhammad said, which Americans don't seem to recognize. That for a Muslim, the only guarantee of them entering Muhammad's lurid whorehouse of paradise, where they have the multiple virgins and rivers that flow with wine, is to be killed killing. If you're not killed killing, you aren't getting in. And so they want to die killing. What better way to die killing than to drop a nuclear bomb on Israel or the great Satan, the great crusader, the United States, and have retaliation? It's mass euphoria for Muslims. And so an Iran with a nuclear bomb is a serious problem. The second thing I wanted to say is that I'm convinced, in having read the Torah, prophets, and Psalms and studied them, that while there will be a nuclear exchange, and Yahweh speaks of elements melting with intense heat, he talks about one-third of the Earth's surface being uninhabitable. He talks about the consequence of the sky being so opaque that the sun and the moon are no longer even visible, which would be all consequences of a nuclear exchange. He talks about one quarter and then one third of the Earth's population dying in a series of wars and calamities. And so it is very likely that we're going to have a nuclear exchange. I do not think, however, that Israel is the victim of a nuclear exchange. I do think that Israel is the victim of great calamity based upon what we have read. And what we have read is that America's involvement in the Syrian civil war, which is not a political war but a religious war between Sunnis and Shias, a direct result of America's invasion of Iraq and giving Iraq to Iran, that America arming both sides and providing 25 times more weapons to the Muslims that want to annihilate Israel than to Israel to defend itself, and the insistence of the United States to cut Israel in two, narrowing it at the waist, which is part of the prophecy, that after the Muslims in the Islamic State overthrow the Syrian government and fully establish their own state, they will immediately take advantage of the dismemberment of Israel, of it being narrowed at the waist, a la Czechoslovakia and Peace of Our Time with Neville Chamberlain, and they will flood by the hundreds of millions into Israel. And great carnage will occur. Toxins will be deployed, and the war against Israel will be horrendous. Now, Yahweh will intervene, and he will stop them before they completely destroy Jerusalem. But I do not think that Israel will be the primary target, although they will be the stated target of the Iranian nuclear arsenal. And I'm convinced that they will get the bomb. They will not, in all likelihood, be the initial recipient. I think that those bombs will be sailed into America's largest cities and detonated there. Now, as it relates to all of this, Benjamin Netanyahu is poised to speak at Congress. The Obaminator, as a narcissist, is having a conniption fit over this. And he is doing everything he can to preempt the merits of that speech to undermine Israel's position. And he's had everyone from his national security advisor saying that the speech is destructive, to his secretary of state saying that the Israeli prime minister may not be right, and now threatening him, literally threatening Israel, to say you cannot disclose any of the terms of the negotiations. Well, why not? If the negotiations are reasonable, if the negotiations are moral, if the negotiations are just, if the negotiations are aimed at actually achieving a favorable result, why not disclose them? If those negotiations are like the last, which give Iran everything and get nothing, then shouldn't they be disclosed? I mean, the single greatest threat to our time is Iran with nuclear weapons. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Well, with that background, the Reuters article reads, Iran on Tuesday rejected as unacceptable U.S. President Barack Obama's demand that it freeze sensitive nuclear activities for at least 10 years, but said that it would continue talks aimed at securing a deal. Now, the Obaminator has said that they must accept a 10-year ban on developing a nuclear bomb for a deal to be reached, and Iran says Iran will not accept excessive and illogical demands. Amazing. Why would it be an unacceptable and illogical demand if, in fact, they were developing nuclear power plants? Hello, Glenn. What do you think about all of this? Haven't heard from you for a couple of weeks. You must have been working.
Yeah, I've been busy out of my mind with weather and work and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. You're part of that. You're not in Boston, but you're a little south of the great onslaught of global cooling.
Oh, yeah. We haven't, gotten hit with the worst. We got some more incoming today, which could, again, affect my work schedule, but we'll see.
My farm in Virginia, my wife has been back there for the last couple of weeks while I've been out here in the on the west, and she has for the first time said, I've had it. Enough of the snow, enough of the ice. I can't go outside because you can't stand because there's now 3 inches of ice on top of 6 inches of snow. It won't melt. It's just become miserable. You can't drive. You can't go outside. You can't do anything.
Well, in Pennsylvania, we've had it, I think, a little easier than them. For some reason, in the Philadelphia, we get hit by bad stuff, but we never seem to have the worst of the worst. And strangely enough, sometimes there's worse stuff south of us, you know.
Yeah, you know, and this is the third year in a row where the United States has suffered the effect of global cooling.
Well, thank God.
I mean, I've got to congratulate the and praise the climatologists of the world and the politicos that are in league with them for changing global warming to climate change, because, you know, you'd have a real tough time today selling someone in the United States on the notion of global warming with these last 3 years, and particularly the last 16 or 17.
Well, there's no doubt there's climate changing, but it is. I certainly don't believe it's anthropogenic. I don't think humans are causing it. And I have heard some climatologists talking about the possible onset of a Maunder minimum ice age, and they're saying that sometimes you only get like two or three seasons of notice before this sort of thing sets in for like 40 to 60 years or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
You know, the fact is we are in a warming period. We started a warming period about 1850 to 1875. Those warming periods have been cycles of a minimum of 300 years, a maximum of about 700 years. They average around 600 years, and we've been in a warming and cooling cycle of an average of 600 years now for at least the last 100 million years or so, having absolutely nothing to do with humankind. Long before humankind was created, we went into these cycles. We began the cycle, as usual, about 1850 to 1875, coming out of the Little Ice Age. And I'm going to tell you that the Little Ice Age was horrendous, because it was the two great plagues that ravaged Europe were both a direct result of those. It caused great famine that weakened the human immune systems throughout the world, and particularly in Europe, making them susceptible to the plague. The cooling side of these trends have a horrendous negative effect on humankind. And so we ought to be celebrating the fact that we came out of the last little ice age and that we're moving towards a warming trend. But if man is having any effect, the effect that we're having is we are thwarting the warming. We're actually, and as a matter of fact, if you look at the global ice progression during the winters and it melting during the summers, we're at a time where we're seeing the ice encroach further south than we've ever recorded it. We're seeing, we've had now 2 years of the last three where the Great Lakes have frozen solid, which is really unusual for them to completely freeze over, and some to depths of 5 or 6 feet.
Well, you could practically walk from Brooklyn to Manhattan last week, the freeze, you know.
Yes. We really do have an issue. Now, do I think that there is a climate change? Absolutely. There's been climate change since the Earth was created. But as you say, it has nothing to do with man.
Yeah. And then there's all sorts of variables you're not going to tell us about. But and even these Maunder minimums can be parenthetical within a warming period.
Yeah, I know one way that you can warm up the Earth instantaneously and then put it into an instant winter. And what the Obaminator is doing on behalf of Iran may put us there. We'll talk about that with Glenn when we return. Iran, Obama, and the bomb. So what do you think about the fact that the Obaminator throws a Hail Mohammed at the last minute? You know, when his nuclear, this is the phase three postponement four of his nuclear talks with Iran. They've obviously failed. So he throws a Hail Mohammed and says, what we're looking for, just in simple terms, is a 10-year halt on their development of a nuclear bomb. And that will be acceptable to us.
Then Iran says,
hell no. That's completely unacceptable.
That wasn't a Hail Mohammed. He just threw the ball out of bounds. You know, it produced the intended result. You know, knowing that the potential for an agreement was scuttled, he decided just to revert to the status quo. He never intended for it. He knew they would never accept that. It was designed to be rejected.
So what it announces, though, if you're paying attention, is that this whole idea that Israel can't mention any detail of the agreement that Kerry saying a week ago that and the little slime Rice that is the national security advisor, part of the anti-Semitic team, saying that Netanyahu's speech was destructive because it comes at a time of negotiations with Iran, that all of that was an absolute lie. They are nowhere close to an agreement with Iran, and so Obama just threw the ball out of bounds to stop the clock.
It was all intended, and I, in other words, I don't think Netanyahu won an agreement either, and so Netanyahu's visit has had its desired effect, and Obama's, throwing the ball out of bounds has had its desired effect. The whole point of Netanyahu coming here was to create this tempest in the teapot to scuttle an agreement. Isn't this agreement being sponsored by the P5+1, theoretically? Of which Israel is not a part.
Correct. The primary, the intended victim of the bomb is not part of the discussions. Isn't that great?
Right, yeah. By those standards, Israel's not entitled theoretically to be privy to the information of the agreement, because they're not really part of the P5+1. And, I understand why Netanyahu would say, hey, let's put it out there, but these are negotiations. They don't like the information coming out because things can ensue which subtle things.
Dynamic. But the fact is that there have been no negotiations. The Iranians haven't given up anything. America has capitulated on everything, and they are nowhere close to a deal. They never have been close to a deal. So the president simply threw out a Hail Mohammed out of bounds pass that says, agree to a 10-year hiatus on a bomb. Just think about it on the surface. How is that a good thing? To pump the ball 10 years down the road. And, of course, Iran just says, hell no, we won't agree to that.
Well, yeah, let me throw a few things out. And there's no use trying to structure things too much for the listeners because they're going to go listen to other, TV shows and radio shows and hear other stuff anyway. So it's not like you're trying to confine the data. But let me throw some stuff out there and dump my little box out on the table and see what, we're talking about. But first of all, for me, to be honest with you, you start your program by saying that how everything's broken and cannot be fixed. I agree with that. And Yahweh knows this, and Yahweh has already stated in advance what is going to transpire. Mm-hmm. Consequently, yes. I don't have that much of a dog in this fight or horse in this race. I know that they're not going to succeed. Now, don't get my knickers in a twist over it, because I know Yahweh's already, foreseen this and said this.
We're in agreement that Yahweh, particularly in Yeshaya, Isaiah 17 and 18, has told us exactly what's going to happen and when it's going to happen and the progression of events. And we're witnessing those events play out before our eyes, including the United States complicity in the whole mess. Well, that is true. And so it's going to happen. The fact of the matter is that it's still advantageous for us to tell people who are still leaning towards patriotism, who are still somehow engaged with their country, that their country is betraying everyone. And that they ought not be doing that. And there are some percentage of the people who will recognize that that's true, and some percentage of them who will seek truth, who will seek the ultimate answer, because there is individual salvation in the midst of all of this. So that's the only reason we do it, is we know it's going to happen. None of this is a surprise.
Right, exactly. So I agree. So we should do the right thing. We don't have Yahweh's time transcendence perspective, and we're sitting here plodding through space-time, and we have to do what's right regardless. I agree. Now let me, don't get nervous, let me back around the China shop and knock things over for a couple of a minute here. From what I see, I don't really see any good guys in this situation. I'm just a bunch of guys, and they're all sinners screwing things up. First of all, the West, we know that Israel and the West.
Okay, what you're saying is there's no good politician.
They're all corrupt.
You expect me to object to that?
No. Okay, well, I'll get there. I'll work on it. I'll try harder. We know that the West, we've been raised with the Cold War. We think of great big bombs, city killers, and stuff like that. We know that part of the reason that they're thinking like nuclear war is possible. We've seen the evolution of tactics, and Israel's not only been privy to these things, Israel's been pioneering in these things in some ways. We now have tac nukes, neutron nukes, dialable yield mini nukes, and stuff like that. Okay, and to be honest, one thing where you and I may not be in the same.
I don't know if we really do have a neutron bomb. I don't really know if we have a technical nuke. I mean, a lot of discussions about developing them. Yeah. But you know, America was always about the intercontinental ballistic missile, mega kiloton fusion, which is a hydrogen bomb, and being able to blast entire countries out of existence. You know, with the idea of us deploying a tactical nuclear weapon. Yeah, I guess it's feasible, but...
I think tac nukes are very old. I think tac nukes have been around for a very long time, probably in the early 80s.
Yeah, I've heard that we've had them in artillery shells, and we have them in cruise missiles, and, you know, they're really tactical and tiny and by comparison. You know, that's extraordinarily deadly and destructive device, no matter what size.
I believe it was an Israeli scientist that developed the technology for the neutron nuke, as a matter of fact. Now, I would go so far as to say, now, I know we all know that at Armageddon there's definitely divine intervention. I'm not at all certain. The Magog.
There is also a Magog. Armageddon is ended by Yahusha's return. Yahweh's return. Is ended by Yahweh obliterating the Muslims who come into Israel.
Okay, now, I'm not sure it's Yahweh who does that, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you read through that scenario, and I've had to point this out to I pointed this out to Christians and stuff. Everybody assumes, you see the reference to contractors, people putting flags by bodies and contractors going through the land, you know, cleaning up the body. That occurs after the entire inhabitants of the city goes out and is burying them for 6 months in the Valley of Hinnom Gog. Okay? The entire inhabitants. That means there is not nuclear, biological, or chemical contamination. That's not an NBC situation. And so we know, and so I'm...
Well, I agree that there's not going to be a nuclear bomb in Israel, so we're in agreement there. I do think there's a possibility of chemical and biological weapons that, and by the way, most chemical and biological weapons have a very short life. I mean, they will kill, and then a day later, you can go into the area where they have killed without and bury bodies without.
Unless they're biological, because just rotting bodies are themselves a biohazard.
Oh, that's true.
Regardless of, you know, we know that at some point, the circumstances allow for the entire inhabitants of the city to be out there burying them. And then when there's a remnant, somebody sticks a flag by it, that's when they have the contractors come through. So I think it's entirely possible that what vanquishes 5/6 of the invading army at the Magog battle could well be some other tactical neutron nukes or something like that. But anyway, so I'm not at all convinced that that is a direct divine intervention at that point. Certainly at Armageddon, that's, you know, what coming, you know, intervening directly.
Okay.
But, you know, so anyway. But anyway, so this stuff, frankly, I mean...
I'm not going to be here when the Magog War... I'm not going to be here when the Magog War comes to a close.
Exactly.
It is the timing of it, having the Magog War arise out of America's Syrian civil war, the war America not only created with its invasion of Iraq, but has been arming both sides. And having greater Syria fall, and then having America lead the parade to sever Israel at the waist, narrowing her to 5 to 10 miles wide, where 70% of the population live, and having Muslims immediately capitalize on that by flooding into Israel by the hundreds of millions, and actually occupying much of Israel. That is absolutely clear, and the fact that they fail. And how they fail, at least appear to me to be a divine intervention. But Yahweh doesn't tell us how specifically they fail. He tells most Jews, he says, get out of Dodge. I want you to go and hide in the caves in Jordan, in the mountains of Jordan. But we're not told specifically how they fail, only that they do fail. We are told specifically how the next assault on Israel fails, which is the Ramadan. rendezvous at Megiddon. And there it's Yahweh's return is so brilliant that those who are in opposition to him, who are not part of the covenant, are just incinerated with his energy upon return.
And we're going to have much bigger fish to fry. We Westerners, we Americans, we narcissistic Westerners that are spoiled and fat and lazy. Look, we're going to have other judgment problems to deal with because if you look at it, I think that the English-speaking world is going to be greatly compromised by them because if you look at the fact that the Tarshish and all the young lions thereof just sit idly by and say, what are you doing? What are you doing? Are you come to take a spoil? Why are they doing that? Because they're already beaten down and weakened. They are unable to respond.
Right.
So to me, the whole English
we're going to be kind of like Greece is right now, where Greece has got their hand out with the European Union saying, we need more money, while they've got their fist out to the European Union saying, you know, are you coming to take a spoil? America will be so bankrupt and so weakened by this time. America will be in the same mentality, and those who have money, whether it be because of oil or gold or rare earth elements, that those nations will be extracting a toll on America because America has been so belligerent, so narcissistic over time that, you know, we're going to be saying, well, you come to take a spoil? Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I expect that scenario to be true. But I do think that with the demise of half the world's population, it's not just all the asteroid and the mountain falling into the sea and the tidal wave. There'll be a nuclear exchange. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Glenn about future events, and we've had Tracy call in from Washington State. Tracy, I understand that you were you had listened to our Friday show on Yada Yada Radio and had a comment about the translations, which, by the way, my overall reaction was maybe that was a little too intense for radio listeners. But I understand that was not your take.
Well, I was glad I was on my treadmill.
But, it was a workout, wasn't it? It was a mental workout.
Yeah. Well, I try to do both at the same time lately since I'm getting older. But anyway, I enjoyed last week when you were talking. I can't think of the gentleman's name right offhand right now because I'm in shock that I'm even on air. But when you talk about Yahweh will kneel before you and presenting gifts to guard you with a hedge of protection, and I just love that, and so did my girlfriends, and I have always loved that. And to get the real translation, I can't tell you how thankful I am.
Yeah. In fact, what we were talking about is that Kirk called in, and he wanted to differentiate the King James translations that's recited in every church. Which is the Lord God blessing thee, and what was actually written in the text, which is has Yahweh kneeling down to us, lifting us up in love, and so about a week ago, I decided I would go ahead and translate that whole discussion where Yahweh goes to Moshe and says to Moshe, I want you to communicate this to Aaron, and then I want Aaron to communicate this to the children of Israel relative to my role with them and my relationship with them. And so on Friday on the Shabbat show, we walked through the process of translating. It was so much about what God was saying is how he was saying it and how you go about translating Hebrew into to English, and I was going to continue that in the second hour today.
Well, great.
Okay, but it's going to be far more detailed in the sense of, and when we're done, we'll get a reaction from people if this is if a venture into Hebrew grammar with stems and moods and conjugations and pronouns and conjunctions and the like. And word definitions and how you go about the process, the perspective and the attitude to approach translation. We'll find out whether or not that is too mentally exhausting. You know, you're on your treadmill, but this is a mental treadmill that we will be on. The only difference is with your treadmill, when you're done, you end in the same place that you started.
That's
when,
right.
When you are exercising your mind relative to Yahweh's testimony, you end up much closer to him than you did before you began.
And speaking of that, Yada, I just want to thank you for being a direction out of this mountain of darkness that I have tried to walk out of. And you've really helped me and my friends from showing us, just to show us a direction that we can dig in for ourselves. And as the weeks go by, I was introduced to your website last June, and so it's been quite the journey the last 4 years coming out of Christianity and out of Hebrew roots and just the confusion of all of it. But my friend, whom I thought we were friends, but I've pretty much been thrown under the bus, and it happens to go along with what you were talking about on Friday about the unclean meat.
Yes.
And here, it's one of my friends, I guess, is the lady that has been causing all the stir. And sure, this guy that she got
well, actually,
to
think,
write
I actually
to
think
you.
There's several, yeah, there's several of them, and they have partnered with a very hateful and divisive individual
yes.
that is exceedingly narcissistic and exceedingly insecure. And so,
and I don't want to mention any names.
Yeah, in the past, what I have done is I have just chosen to ignore them, and they don't want to go away because their little brief time in the light is when they get notarized, when they get noticed for criticizing, attacking me. So they'll continue to do it, but it's no fun, I will tell you
It isn't fun, but when you feel the friction, I feel I must be on the right path. So.
Yeah, you know, when you're if you're not being criticized, then I can assure you that you're not on the right path. You know, if you look at Yosha, who was the perfect articulator of Yahweh's Torah teaching, they didn't respond very positively to what he had to say, did they?
No.
And so we shouldn't expect it either.